This is John Floridus. Welcome to Musician Spotlight. Today we feature part two of a special two-part program featuring Pat Metheny. This is John Floridus. Welcome to part two of a special two-part Musician Spotlight featuring Pat Metheny. This interview was recorded in early September 2013 during the Crown of the Continent Guitar Festival in Big Fork, Montana. Pat, I wanted to ask you about your writing relationship with Lyle Mays. I like the part on your bio on your website where it compared you to both Lennon McCartney and Ellington Strayhorn. And I thought that seemed to speak to the scope of your music in a really nice way.
Well, Lyle's been great to play with for all these years. I mean, he's one of the few piano players that I've met who truly understands the guitar, and kind of vice versa. You know, I write almost everything on piano, and he's always been quite comfortable to pick up a guitar and play a part on the guitar too. So, you know, in that sense, you know, the writing that we've done over the years has very often been the kind of thing where we're able to understand the whole of it from both perspectives and try to just get the best result. I mean, for me, he's been a fantastic collaborator also to help finish things, you know. That's the bulk of how we've worked together, is that I've written a whole bunch of stuff and then we get together and sort of finish them. You know, and in that sense, you know, we share a certain almost brutal, you know, honesty towards it. I mean, we're almost always talking about it. Like, it needs this, it has too much of that, it has that, you know, it seems like it wants, you know, that. And in a, to once it gets to that point where it's like, I've got a tune and it seems like we should finish it, it's very pragmatic in a way. And it's, you know, he's been a great partner in that respect.
A program host indulgence, if I may. I want to ask you about a specific piece, and I know you probably get asked about this a lot, and which kind of lends itself to the question, are you going with me? The incredible evocative nature of this piece, it continues, you know, after all these years. And speaking of where you write from, I know that you wrote this from a synclavier, which at the time was not a whole lot of folks were writing from a synclavier. And so I know a little bit about that part of it, but I just wanted to know if you could speak to what's your take on how that has connected with so many people. I mean, if you ask a lot of folks, you know, what their favorite tunes are, a lot of times people are going to go to that. Myself, I can include it. And I have a very distinct memory of, if not the first time I heard it, but just a very pivotal moment in my life when that was playing the entire thing and looking out the window, and I just made a big life decision and realizing my life was never going to be the same, you know, and these kinds of connections that a lot of people have, and very specific to that tune.
Well, that's really nice to hear. I love that. I love hearing all those stories, and it's true. That tune, there's a couple of them, you know, over the years. Last Train Home is another one. Gets played a lot of funerals and so forth. That bunch
some
of
gems
them
you've gotten up there, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's you know, births of children for Beyond the Missouri Sky, and you know, all kinds of stuff like that. I really enjoy that. I mean, Are You Going With Me is a tune. You know, that's one that's credited to both Lyle and I, but actually that's just me. It was improvised into the synclavier, and because this was such a radically new concept. I mean, it's almost laughable now. But at the time, to have a sequencer, you know, which is, you know, kind of like a recording sort of thing, but using, you know, the gestures of it rather than the sound of it, you know, this was 1980. And I had just gotten like one of the first 17 synclavs there were. And you couldn't do anything except play, record. You couldn't edit it. You couldn't change anything. So, you know, the form of that tune, I wrote it up in Willow, New York, which is near Woodstock. And basically I played in the bump, 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 bump part, and then I played in the bass line, and it was like, wow, I can play two parts. This is amazing. And I couldn't change it. And, you know, that form, it just showed up. And then they had a button where you could transpose it up a half step. It's like, wow, I can transpose it up a half step. And then I can transpose it up another half step, and it's not going to change pitch. You know, these things that are now so mundane that, I mean, you know, like, you know, any phone can do 10,000 times more than what that was. But, you know, sometimes a little thing like that can launch you into something that can be really great. Mm-hmm. And that tune, I have played it thousands of times now, and I feel like I could play it 24 hours a day.
Wow.
I never get tired of playing that tune. It's sort of the essence somehow of what my kinds of favorite things are, all in one place.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musician Spotlight, and I'm speaking today with Pat Metheny. Pat, I wanted to reference an interview I heard recently with Bob Edwards. I liked your analogy of talking about musical composition in terms of storytelling, because I've heard songwriters talk about that. But I haven't heard that many musicians who are known as instrumental composers use that same sort of analogy to storytelling. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I guess for me, that way of describing the character of somebody as an improviser was something that I heard from Kansas City musicians right from the beginning. In their opinion, the thing that separated an okay player from a really good player was their ability to tell a story. And, the players that would often be listed in that respect would be like Stan Getz. Bird, of course, would be a great example of that. I mentioned Sonny Rollins before, but, kind of on my instrument, I mean, Wes Montgomery, as much as everybody talks about Wes and the thumb and the octaves and all that, the main thing about Wes for me, and the reason he's my favorite by far, is, in fact, his ability to sort of unfold over time long, complex ideas in a narrative kind of way. Now, how this actually shows up, I mean, it's kind of an abstract concept. Okay, you're going to tell a story with melodies, with sound, with groove and so forth as an improviser. What is that, To me, there are certain characteristics that any kind of narrative exposition has, and it could even show up in a movie. It could show up in a conversation that you have with a friend. It could show up in many different ways, but there's a certain structural integrity in terms of the way something begins, the way it has a middle, and the way it has an end. And that may be over the course of a second, that may be over the course of 10 seconds, that may be over the course of a minute, that may be over the course of an entire album, that may be over the course of an entire tour, that might be in the course of a whole life, That thing of sort of rendering time in a way that's comprehensible to some other human being, even in the form of an abstraction. To me, that's our business. That's our job, is to do that. And I feel very lucky to have been around a number of fantastic narrative-type improvisers, Gary Burton right at the top of the list, where night after night after night after night, I could stand right next to somebody doing it and going, okay, here it is, and then looking at me like, okay, now you solo. So, it became, for me, a very literal kind of thing, like where you would feel it. You could sense like, okay, I need to connect this first thing that I play with the second thing I play, which then connects with the third thing I play, which then maybe references the first thing that I played. And at the same time, all the chords are flying by and the drummer is going crazy and all this stuff is going on. But under the hood of it all, there's a certain kind of structural narrative operation going on that I think allows people a sort of framework to grasp onto what you're trying to say. Thank you. I walk out on stage with the assumption that everybody in the audience is really hip and that they're going to be following all this stuff. Mm. And, you know, that's the thing, is to try to make those connections that have a lasting meaning.
I really like what you just said there, because I think a lot of musicians don't necessarily do that. Go in with the assumption that the audience is going to get it, or that they have, because what it speaks to me is the respect that you have for people, as who have come to hear your work. And I definitely get that vibe sometimes from musicians. They don't have that.
Yeah, I mean, it's, to me, the whole point of all of this is that is to offer the best that you can offer to your fellow man, you know, in the form of music. The premise that people are fundamentally hip is one that I still maintain. Mm. It was a lot easier to maintain that premise pre-internet, I have to say. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, I was able to, you know, when you know, the feedback that you got was in the form of a letter or two that at the end of a tour or a record release, and you could sort of measure things off that. Now it's sort of like, you know, comment sections, as everybody knows, that's like the, you know, the worst example of human
humanity, you know,
humanity there is. And it's sort of like that's a little discouraging to think, wow, maybe people aren't quite as hip as I would like to hope that they are. Yeah. But nevertheless, you know, you still, you know, are surprised. Then you know, some person comes up after a gig and says like some mind-blowingly perceptive thing about the music from a complete non-musician's point of view. And it's like, yeah, okay, this is adding up.
This is John Floridus. You're listening to Musician Spotlight, and I'm speaking today with Pat Metheny. Pat, we began our visit talking about, you know, your initial recording, Bright Size Life, and this is one of those kind of breadth of career questions. I can't help but wonder, what does the version of Pat Metheny I'm sitting across the table from, what would he say to that guy who just put out his first recording, in terms of what to expect, what that journey was going to be like?
It doesn't, you know, I don't, my perception of it is that it's a continuation of all of that. I don't feel like I'm removed from it to the point where I'll be able to do that. Because I do think there are musicians that look at their first record and go, oh my God, you know, well, that's so embarrassing and what was I thinking and all that. I mean, with me, there are no points along the way where I go, wow, you know, that, what was that? For the most part, I see it all as one long song that began with that is not over yet. And it's all connected. You know, I guess I would have to be on another planet in a different dimension to really be able to do what you're talking about. Because I feel like I'm still in that. Mm. You know, it doesn't feel foreign to me, or, you know, like, wow, that's just who is that? What is that? Right. That's still, I mean, you know, I could go out tonight and play Bright Side's Life from beginning to end. I wouldn't play it the same way, mm-hmm. but the basic premise of what that is still, I'm still living that.
PatMetheny.com is the name of the website. It's a great website.
Oh, thank you.
Tremendous website. And you're very generous with your time in terms of answering very specific questions for folks.
I mean, I am about once every 3 years.
Generous?
I'm not. No, I don't. I honestly, I don't stay up on the website stuff that much, you know, but there's guys, you know, that do. And and then, you know, there is a thing where people can write in questions. And then, like I say, about every 3 years, I go in there and, you know, find a few and try to answer them. But it's, you know, I enjoy the connection with people, you know, and I really appreciate the fact that people have allowed me the opportunity to be a musician and to, you know, come to the gigs and, you know, buy the records and support my thing, because that allows me to continue the research that I'm doing. And I really do appreciate that. So.
Well, we really appreciate your time and telling listeners again that we're speaking to Pat in Big Fork, Montana, as Pat is here as part of the Crown of the Continent Festival, your second time here, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm hoping that it's something good for you and then we get a chance to visit with you again down
Me
the road.
Me too. I love coming up here, and it's an incredible state that I've only been able to visit a few times over the years, and have really been enjoying our time here.
Great. Thank you. Well, thanks so much for being on the show.
My pleasure.
This is John Floridis. You've been listening to part two of a special two-part musician spotlight featuring Pat Metheny. If you'd like to contact us, you can send us an email through the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org. You can also find us on our own website, musicianspotlight.org, as well as on Facebook. Our program is now available as a downloadable podcast from those websites as well as from iTunes. Special thanks to the Crown of the Continent Guitar Festival for this interview. Musicians Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.